we have something special to add to this, the agenda, which is one of the reasons that we needed to move. Representative Gary Glenn is here, and we invited him to share a few comments, and he agreed. Representative Glenn is the vice chair of the House Energy Policy Committee. He's in his first term representing the 98th District, which includes Midland. So both from his perch on House Energy Policy and as a constituent representative representing Midland, has some familiarity with CHP. And I will say, as somebody who's done the job that Representative Glenn is doing, his ability to get up to speed on a very complicated energy discussion in a matter of weeks, as it's going full steam ahead, has been remarkable. And anybody who sat in the House Energy Policy Committee and listened to the quality of questions or has met with him in his office and really sort of gotten a sense of just how familiar he is, I think, can appreciate both his dedication to getting up to speed and the intellect behind it. So we're thrilled that you're here, Representative, and join me in welcoming Representative Gary Glenn of Midland.
Well, good morning, everybody. Is Valerie going to hang around? Okay. My greatest claim to any credibility or authority on this issue is that I walked in the door with Valerie Brader. She and I were just having breakfast downstairs. I escorted her up to whatever meeting it was she was going to talk to, didn't realize till I walked in the door what it was going to be. So I appreciate the opportunity to share a few comments with you. Valerie and I discovered an affinity for each other. We both moved here from the state of Idaho, me about 20 years ago, so we know a lot of people in common. She worked for some folks that I used to work with. So I look forward to working with Valerie. We're both rabid Boise State football fans, and so I've promised her that when I invite the third-string quarterback of the Detroit Lions to lunch, which I'm going to do, that I'm going to include Valerie. But I know more after breakfast this morning than I knew before, and that has been my experience over the last 4 months. I could claim expertise on labor law reform, health care reform, education reform, some social issues, but the last 4 months on the energy issue as vice chairman of the Energy Committee, which I ask for, have been like going back to college. I've probably put in 60 hours of reading, 2 or 3 hours a night when I'm here in Lansing, and I'm almost giddy that I can sit in these conversations now and actually know what you're talking about. But I did ask for this position and this responsibility, which I have taken very seriously, because this issue, the issue of energy choice and competition and free market principles that we know works in every other aspect of our lives, that's the bias that I'm happy to acknowledge coming in, this whole issue is so important to some major employers and energy providers in the 98th District, which is Midland and Bay County. I understand that there are representatives of Dow Chemical somewhere here in the room. Is that the case? Where are you guys? There's one back there. And I understand that folks from MCV may not be here, but I've been working closely with Dow and certainly with MCV in terms of legislation that would make it easier for you to compete with the utilities on a fair basis, an even playing field. I come to this, as I said, with an acknowledged bias that I believe that multiple providers of a given product or service, with the consumer free to choose from which of those providers he's going to get that product or service, gives us the best product at the best price. We know that works in every other aspect of life. So I come in with the bias of saying, prove to me that doesn't work in the energy business. And so far, I've not yet been persuaded that that doesn't work. So at least as I understand the interests of this organization, I'm going to be an advocate on the Energy Committee for more competition, for a level playing field, and for your ability to provide power in competition with utilities and not be at a disadvantaged position where the presumption is, at least as I see the certificate of need process, being that the self-interested party is the one that self-assesses, self-determines when new capacity is needed. They get basically what amounts to a first right of refusal. I'd like to see, I know what MCV would like to see, is an ability to have the PSC perhaps provide as an honest broker that the PSC take responsibility for identifying new capacity and then simply put it out to bid, let the best man win. If that happens to be you in a certain locality, then great, we appreciate that. Obviously, this is a critical issue to Michigan's ability to attract new business and industry. I heard the CEO of Dow Chemical give a speech about a month ago in Midland. He only committed, if I remember correctly, two sentences to the energy issue. But those two sentences were, we're going to continue to do operations in Midland because that's part of our heritage and we're proud of it. But if you want to know why you're not getting some of the projects in Midland that are going to Houston, give us more competitive energy rates and you'll get them. Well, that wasn't very much, but I certainly got the message. So just know that you have a friend for competition and your ability to fairly compete to provide energy to the people and the manufacturers of Michigan on the committee. But please, as I said to Valerie at breakfast this morning, don't assume I understand anything. Help teach me. I'm going to be in this role for at least another 20 months or so, maybe longer than that if I decide to run for re-election. But look forward to working with each and every one of you, and I'll let whoever is next on the agenda get up here and continue to educate. And if you've got any questions by which you might educate me or direct me now, happy to stand for them. Or you know how to get in touch with me, and I'm in touch with your lobbyists over on the Hill. So anybody have any questions for me this morning? Okay. Then yes, sir.
This is, may be actually both for you and for Valerie. I've noticed with a number of the clients that we're working with, the hosts, they see definitely a need, a desire, a benefit to having a combined heat and power. However, we're seeing where because of the utility rate structure and something that you just mentioned here as far as the overall state of Michigan and the way that a source of power, a producer, could access the state, we're seeing a lot of obstacle. For instance, I have one of the universities has a combined heat and power system right now, but they throttle it back. And they do that because if they make excess power, not only just to sell out on the grid, they don't get enough return for it to pay for the natural gas, but also they actually throttle it more than that because of the way the billing structure is. If they go beyond a certain capacity limit, they, again, get penalized for that. And the other thing we're seeing is these hosts, because of that, they could put in a larger power generation component to their CHP, but they don't because, again, putting it back out on the grid, which is, of course, the promise of distributed energy, it doesn't pay for them to do it, so they're not doing it. You mentioned the MCV plant. They were proposing just a couple of years ago putting in another 650 megawatts of capacity on that site. Now they're looking at, again, incremental, small capacity units because, again, they can't get they can't get access to the grid. So what I'm seeing is people recognize the benefit, but they're not doing it because of these impediments. Can you address that?
Well, I'm told that we have the sixth worst law in the nation in terms of net metering, the level at which, if I understand correctly, is 150 kilowatts, and I stand to be corrected, but I'm told that's the sixth worst in the nation, that Ohio and Pennsylvania have far larger far higher thresholds, up to the point at which you're reimbursed at the retail rate, the same rate you'd pay if the energy was coming in and you weren't putting it into the grid. So we're going to look at that as well. That's also one of the impediments, I'm told, to any major investment by the solar industry in Michigan. And you understand from the utilities perspective, they think at whatever point you're being reimbursed at the retail rate that that's a subsidy. And so, of course, they're opposed to any lifting of the cap. And then I have people who tell me, you know, far more about this than I do after 4 months as a freshman vice chairman of this committee, who tell me that the utilities have been compensated multiple times over by the stranded costs and the, what's that term, Valerie, about securitization. The securitization and stranded costs compensation by which, if I understand correctly, this is what I've been told, and I'm at a point where I really don't know anything I haven't that, except what I've been told or have read, is that those securitization and stranded cost reimbursements were calculated as if 100% of the consumers in the state of Michigan left the utilities when that was the option back in from 2000 to 2008. So they were compensated as if they lost everybody. and compensated from 2000 until last year, 14 years, even though, if I understand correctly, at the most 18% of the consumers actually did choose an alternative energy supplier. And then as of 2008, it was capped at 10%. But they were compensated as if 100% left and compensated for 15 years. So some would argue that they've been multiple times overcompensated for what they characterize as being a subsidy if you are compensated at the retail rate. So I am, honestly, I'm open. I know this is going to be one of those kind of things, as Valerie and I discussed this, where they're going to plant a flag at one end of the debate. Somebody else needs to plant the flag at the other end of the debate, and then we're going to find something in the middle. But when we are the sixth worst in the nation, that suggests that other states have found a more balanced middle ground than Michigan has had. So that, I come, as I said, into this job with a bias toward more competition, anything that will stimulate, and what you just described depresses competition. So I'm going to be looking for ways to push the envelope the other way on the choice issue, on the net metering issue, and we'll see where we end up. I was very encouraged by the breakfast I had with Valerie because she confirmed that that's exactly how this process is going to work. We're going to try to find something in the middle in terms of doing what's best for the future of Michigan. Did that answer your question? I don't know enough to know that I answered your question, so make sure that
no,
I
did. No, well, what you're suggesting is promise, but one of the things you mentioned, if I could follow up a little bit,
yes,
the 10% cap on competition, didn't I just see some proposed legislation to bring that to zero? So again, we'd be back to the solid monopolies of power generation. Did I see that?
You did, in fact, with all due respect to my senior chairman of the House Energy Committee. I asked to be on Energy Committee. The Speaker of the House, who also represents Midland County, gave me that position as vice chairman. I am, of course, well aware of the legislation that is before the House Energy Committee now. I'm a freshman, but as I have point out to people, I was actually a registered lobbyist when I was 20 years old, so I'm a freshman with 36 years of experience in the legislative process. I don't think that legislation, my first read on that legislation was that was probably planting the flag on one extreme. So I've asked for legislation that just lifts the cap. That's perhaps the flag on the other extreme. We're going to find something in the middle. I don't believe that. I would have said in the beginning that because the governor was calling for retention of the 10% cap and so was the Senate, that the chairman's legislation to do away with the choice market altogether probably would not be where we ended up. Maybe the worst place we end up is just to keep what we've got. And I know the governor's position is to keep the 10% cap, but maybe elevate the requirements for being in the cap. Frankly, I'm going to push the envelope a little bit and see how far we can go in the other direction. For example, it was an enlightenment to me based on the testimony of one witness for 4 minutes who completely recast the debate. And that was the Clarkston Public School District business manager who appeared in front of us to say that we save $350,000 a year by being in the choice market, somebody other than DTE. And if you force us, as the legislation you just mentioned would, to go back to DTE, we'd have to lay off 5 teachers. And I watched my Democratic colleagues light up over to my right. I think that has completely recast the issue. We now find that I think there's about 550 to 600 public school districts, but then each of the 400 and some charters count. So the question is, how do you count that as a percentage? If you're just counting the traditional school districts, it's about 60% of the school districts who are in the choice market now save tens of millions of dollars, and those who can't be in the choice market, I mean, that's the only reason they're not. They're not in the choice market because they can't be. They couldn't get under the 10% cap. So first piece of legislation I'm going to introduce is to say every public school district can access choice, and that doesn't count against the 10% cap. Now, that doesn't lift the 10% cap, but it will create a void that can be filled in by some of those people sitting there 15% in the queue. Senator Shirky has legislation to take the cap up to 25% to incorporate everybody, the 15% in the queue, and then ratchet it up by 5% thereafter. I'd vote for that. I'm being very transparent here. I'm going to give the committee a series of what I believe will be difficult to vote against pieces of legislation. I think it will be difficult for the committee to vote against letting every public school district save school districts millions of dollars. We'll find out. And then somebody said, one of the Democrats said, well, what about hospitals? I said, great. What about prisons, which we calculate, except for their energy optimization efforts that the administration has already made, as Valerie informed me this morning, our original calculations was that prisons alone would save $3 million if they were allowed choice. But Valerie tells me they've already done intensive upgrades in terms of energy optimization so that they're may not be as much savings there as the school districts have experienced at 20 or 30%. So we're going to end up somewhere. I'm fairly confident right now that the 10% choice market is not going to go away, and I'm going to see just how far we can push the envelope and increase that if we can. My entire experience and base of knowledge on this issue has been in the shadow of this claim that we are facing an impending calamity. And as new information comes out over the last 4 months, that's the lifespan of my exposure in any intense way to this issue. As new information comes out, we find out that MISO, for example, projected a year ago we were going to have a 3,000 megawatt shortfall this coming year. Their latest auction report says it's only going to be 1,000. Then I'm told we got at least 3,000 of import capacity through transmission lines from MISO and maybe from PJM over in the southwest corner. So I have not yet been, I have not been persuaded that we are facing this great calamity under which all these decisions have attempted to be cast, that we have to give the utilities back 100% of the market so that they have enough guarantee. And I do not say this in the least bit way to be disparaging of the utilities. They're a major employer, a major contributor to our communities. But what business wouldn't want the government to pass a law that guaranteed them 100% of the market? If you could get it, you'd like to have that. I mean, you might offend your free market principles, but what entity wouldn't want to have that? We were told, as I understand it, when the market was open in 2008, just give us 90% of the market back and we'll build new capacity. That was done, and no new capacity has been built. While in Ohio, which has a completely open market, there are 6 new plants in the process of being built or permitted. So for a guy that comes into the process with a free market bias, weighing the evidence, I'm not seeing evidence that suggests either that we necessarily have an impending calamity. I understand that in the worst case scenario, and the words shortage and shortfall are used interchangeably, but I've been told there's a difference. But in the worst case, if I understand it, all these 9 coal-fired plants do close down, that we move from a 15% reserve capacity to a 13% reserve capacity. It does not seem as calamitous to a guy who's just new to the issue as we're being told on these TV ads. So anyway, I don't want to monopolize the whatever time was scheduled for the people who were planned to be on your agenda, but I hope I'm making clear the bias that I bring to it, and the burden of proof is on those who believe that there ought to be monopolies instead of free markets and competition. Nope, great.
Representative Gary Glenn.